This is no ordinary pod. No ordinary pod.
Yes, this is another episode of the No Ordinary Pod on the Radio St. Pete and No Ordinary Pod Network. Once again, waiting on my boy Adam to finish the logo and all that stuff before we launch. Been saying it for a couple weeks now. This is episode 6 of the rebrand. Should already been done, but hey, you can't rush perfection. And I'm not going to rush perfection because this is a long game. So we're coming to you at 1:34 in the Eastern time in the morning after a very, I wouldn't say, for me, it's entertaining. It was a very interesting draft. Noah, how are you feeling after a night out on Tallahassee? Looking spiffy, I may say.
Well, thank you. I rocked the pink shirt that my mom bought me.
Shout out Eliana.
Yeah, shout out to Eliana. Thank you. I'm doing well, man. I'm just ready to kind of. This is what I've been waiting for over the past 2-3 months. Because we still got 2 more days, 5 more, 6 more rounds of the NFL draft. But over these next couple days, this is where teams solidify their rosters. They'll make some moves. Maybe a little bit afterwards, you'll get some undrafted free agents. But after the draft's over and all that's over, this is the team that the personnel that people have is what they're going to have. And they might make a trade here or there. They might, you have freak injuries in the preseason, and then people might try to make a move a la Teddy Bridgewater and the Sam Bradford trade a couple years ago, things like that. But it's hard to really determine what a team's going to be without the rookies being on board, because particularly first round rookies would like to see them have an impact on a team. Not always going to happen. A lot of guys you draft for development, some guys are going to come in and just be ballers from the get-go. So that's what I'm excited to see, is how these teams are going to be oriented over the next couple of days.
Well, said it perfectly. And the first five picks were chalk, and we're gonna get right into it. We're not gonna go through pick by pick, essentially, and give our thoughts, but we're gonna just go through and make the head scratching ones, the ones we like the most. Pat ourselves in the back for getting a couple mid to late round picks, right? So let's just start at the top. Kyler Murray went number 1 overall to the Cardinals. No shock. We've talked and debated extensively about this and what this means for Josh Rosen. And I feel like this is just a good way to start. I asked you on the Tuesday pod where was Josh Rosen's ideal place be, and I'm looking through the draft, and I see Dwayne Haskins fall. We'll get to Dwayne Haskins in Washington. We see Daniel Jones. We're going to get to Daniel Jones and the Giants very shortly. We'll get to that. But I'm looking, and I mean, the teams that were active in trying to get him were the Giants, the Chargers, and the Dolphins. Giants got their quarterback of the future, quote unquote. I'm laughing. I can't wait to get to the quotes that Dave Gettleman has said tonight, too. The Dolphins, now Dolphins and Chargers have initiated a little bit, but they also have Drew Lock waiting there, who's going to be coming in a second round contract or a third round contract, and it's just a very peculiar situation for your boy, because there's not that many teams in the NFL that need a quarterback, unless he's willing to sit for a couple years. I don't know how many teams are willing to pay a first round top 10 quarterback contract for a backup quarterback or quarterback of the future, but we're not going to get into that. Just want to say that real quick. Kyler went 1, Nick Bosa went 2, Quinnen Williams went 3. And no surprise there, correct?
No, that was pretty much what everyone thought was going to happen, unless if there was going to be some unforeseen crazy thing. But that's been the staple 1-2-3 for the past 6-7 weeks.
And the only difference would be with the Jets if they were going to go Williams or Josh Allen. Pick 4. John Gruden's going to do Gruden stuff, and he got Cleveland Farrell from Clemson, defensive end. And it's not that he's not a dominant player, but, as I thought about this, I'm like, it came off, it surprised me. And then I'm like, okay, this guy's actually, You know, he's higher on, he's pretty high on people's boards. They could have got him later in the draft in the first round, but the problem is no one was trying to trade up with Oakland. No one was going to, everyone seemed content with staying where they were and drafting the quarterback or the player they had on their board. So, yes, Oakland reached, but they got a three-down defensive end instead of an outside linebacker, and they needed any. You mentioned two days ago how they need someone opposite of Arden Key, and Farrell may not be the best player available, but I kind of like the fit there, especially because you know you identify a player that you want for your defense and your scheme. If is it a reach, sure. But if he hits, no one's going to be talking about the reach. No one's going to be talking about them going fourth overall. It's going to be talking about they have a productive player that they obviously value pretty highly. So what are your thoughts on Farrell going forward to Oakland?
I actually kind of like it. You know, again, you know, we talked about it on the Tuesday pod, but the most impressive team that I saw working FSU football was that Clemson team. And coming into the season, when all those guys came back, you know, Dexter Lawrence, Clyde and Farrell, for example, when they all decided they were going to come back, try to get the boys back together and try to win a national championship, everyone's immediate reaction was, this D-line's going to be nasty.
Mm-hmm. The Power Rangers.
And it was. It was their D-line is the whole, not the whole reason, but it allowed everything on the back end of that Clemson defense and Brett Venables to just do what they had to do. And when you think about it, like looking back on it in hindsight, it isn't surprising that one of the Clemson D linemen went in the top five because they were that good this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, each one of them made each other better because they're all awesome across the board. But you go back and watch his film, he's throwing tackles to the ground, shedding blocks, and great run defender. That's probably what I'm most excited for is he defends the run so well, but also – because a lot, like that was the biggest concern with Brian Burns. Can he defend the run? Because, but with Farrell, you know, he's listed 6'4", 264. He can play on the end. He can shed blocks. He can do the things that he needs to do, but at the same time, he can still get after the passer, get after the quarterback if they needed to. If needed to, he could. I think he could play outside linebacker. I'm pulling up his combine right now because I'm curious what his cone and let me tell you, got it right here. He did 25 reps on bench. Three cone drill was 7.26, and oh, come on, load. Not going to load? Oh, well. I'll try to get a load in a second. But he has the stats. You know, he played in a very forward-thinking, a very progressive, a tenacious defense. And he comes, more so than anything, he comes from a college football program that, I know Alabama's impressive, but Clemson impresses me more than Alabama does. I don't know how you – that's kind of a moderate hot take, but just the way that Clemson manages themselves always comes out. They're not just a, oh, you know, here we go. Let's reload with our five stars. They're getting to that point. But
mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see what he does. Like, I was shocked to see him go. But then, again, when you think about it, Clemson had the best D-line in the country. So why don't you just get the best D-lineman from the best D-line – in the country.
Yeah. I mean, do you just want to go to Oakland's picture in general right now? Just, I feel like that's a good way to group it. So
yeah, let's do it.
So they went Josh Jacobs 24. We had him going 27. I mean, I feel like that was a very obvious pick that Marshawn Lynch retired. I don't, like we said, I don't think they're going to go into the draft with Jalen, into the season with Jalen Richard and just the rest of that bunch. So you weren't as high on Jacobs as most people. I looked at his highlights and I watched his combine. I mean, his pro day and stuff. And I am excited to see what he can do. I know Gruden likes physical backs. He's a physical back. He actually, He can catch the ball out of the backfield. Drafting running back in the first round, questionable. But, I mean, I'm not too upset with the pick that they did. I like the guy. And, you know, think about who Gruden's had. Think back who Gruden had with the Bucks. He drafted Cadillac Williams in top five. So he likes physical backs. Not upset with this. He needs a running game for Derek Carr. And, you know, it was one of the most, if not the most rumored, it was the most lock pick of team and player, especially this late in a draft.
Yeah, it wasn't surprised. The only reason why I didn't like the Josh, like I wasn't a huge fan of them going Josh Jacobs first round. I mean, if he's your guy, get your guy, especially if you know he can be good in pass pro, because that's the biggest thing. If you can be good in pass pro, then you can play on third downs. If you can catch the ball moderately and do pass pro, you're going to be on the field all three downs. The biggest thing for me, though, was I just think that there's so much running back depth in this class that in Oakland needs so much help in so many different areas. I don't think it was just necessary for them to go running back in the first round. But if you feel that he is a game changer, especially with them losing, I know Marshawn wasn't great by any means last year. Not the Marshawn that we all know and love. But losing Marshawn, no Isaiah Crowell, huge hole at running back. So if you think that he's your top guy, and if you have him as your top guy, and you think that he'd be a good fit in your offense, why not? You know. So if it pans, I mean, obviously if it pans out, it's a good pick. But to get him at 24, it could be worse. You know, it wasn't a top 10 pick that they spent, which is something that, you know, we've seen. Gettleman's drafted past two drafts before this one, drafted two running backs in the top 10. One with Christian McCaffrey, Saquon last year. So,
yeah, I mean, we can debate running back value forever. We've done it forever. So they finished their third first round pick by getting Jonathan Abram, safety. Another position that's not really, you would say, highly valued in the NFL. But Abram's he's just a solid player. And I kind of like their secondary flexibility they have now with him, LaMarcus Joyner, and we'll see if Carl Joseph, another first round pick from West Virginia a couple years ago, see where he fits in there. And they have Gerrion Conley. A lot of talent, a lot of speed on the defense. Interested to see if Paul Gunther's the guy for it. And with Vontaze Burfict in the middle. Offense, I like what they did. See how Gruden can get everyone playing together. They needed, luckily for them, there's a lot of offensive linemen left. Juwan Taylor and Dalton Risner and Cody Ford are all available. So they kind of got lucky in that sense where they can still get an O-lineman and get some depth and probably an insert starter with a second-round pick. So let's keep it moving. The Bucs shot the Devin White. We figured they were going to go there. Seemed like one of the Sherlocks as well. And the more I watch him play, the more I watch his highlights, the more I watch tape and all that stuff, I actually love this pick for the Bucs. Even with Josh Allen, even with Ed Oliver on the table, I'm very content and I'm 100% settled on this. Any quick thoughts on Devin White before we get to the main event of the evening?
I'm just excited to watch a linebacker for the Bucs run sideline to sideline. Because the dude is like a cheetah. He really is. He sees ball and he goes and hits ball, and he has great instincts. I think you don't take a linebacker top 10, top 5 if you don't think that he's going to just be an absolute stud. And we have, like, the Bucs have such a huge hole at linebacker moving forward, like in the long term. So I think when you have a chance to pick up guy like Devin White, or even like a Devin Bush, like the Steelers did, which I love that move, by the way. I know we'll dive into that in a minute, but I think you have to. And that move, I think, allows the Bucs to have more flexibility, especially if they, I, I know their base in the NFL at this point is just to run nickel, but if we're trying to run an odd front and go 3-4 or even have the versatility and go even front and go 4-3, he allows you to be able to have that smooth transition regardless. And you have a guy like Deion Buchanan who has played in this system, and Devin White will just be able to learn and be groomed from someone like that. And honestly, LSU's defense, Dave Aranda's and Todd Bowles' 34 defense are both extreme, or they're very, very similar defenses. Mm-hmm. So I think from a schematic point, it makes a lot of sense. From an athlete standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. And we reload with an LSU linebacker. And the past two LSU linebackers we've had have been pretty solid. Quan was awesome for us, getting him fourth round.
I'll Google that while you...
And we also got Kendall Beckwith, who, if when healthy, is a solid starter, who I think was also, I want to say a third, fourth, was a day two, early day three pick for the Bucks as well. So getting a day one LSU linebacker, I you really can't miss.
Yeah, especially one at this highly valued. Kendall Beckwith was a round three, and Quan was round four. So you know that one. All right, let's just get to it. The Giants drafted Daniel Jones out of Duke University, sixth overall, a player that we had going 17. Probably would be there at pick 17. So I'm just going to read you some quotes. I'm not going to lie. You're a more college football guy than me. I don't watch a lot of Duke football, especially when I'm trying to break down NFL talent. So I'm just going to read you a couple quotes. I have to ask you this question. When do you think the first time Dave Gettleman saw Jones in person was? Play in person.
Was it an actual game?
No.
I didn't think so. His pro day?
Senior Bowl.
Oof.
He said after three series, he said, that's the guy that's our franchise quarterback. Three series. In a Senior Bowl.
Oof.
He also went to say, he sees Daniel Jones as a potential franchise quarterback, but also mentions he could sit for 3 years. I'm not making this up.
These are quotes that I have not heard.
Yes.
That's, oh my God.
This is a good one. The Giants have drafted the Senior Bowl MVP in three consecutive drafts. Daniel Jones, Kyle Alueta, Davis Webb. I'm just scrolling through Twitter, and it just keeps all these keep coming up, and it's just more comedy, more comedy, more comedy. You draft a quarterback probably because he has the Manning blessing, so you're now the Manning franchise outright. So, a guy that we didn't think was a good value at 17 goes at 6 when Josh Allen and Ed Oliver fall into your lap. And you are a D-line draft person. And the second best interior D-lineman in the draft is there for you, Ned Oliver. And here's the good thing. That pick you got from Cleveland, you draft Dexter Lawrence. The worst of the three Clemson D-linemen. The guy who is literally like a nose tackle. So you move on from Damon Snacks Harrison. You want to play... what's his name? I can't think of his name right now. You want to play someone at nose tackle, yet you draft a nose tackle. Oh, and you directly traded Odell Beckham Jr. for Dexter Lawrence. On top of that, to keep piling on, I'll let you get in a second. I'm just laying out everything for the listeners. Your future franchise quarterback receiver tandem is Daniel Jones to Sterling Shepard. Instead of having simply Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, or Josh Rosen to Odell Beckham. Because you had to draft Saquon, and then you had to trade Odell Beckham, and now you have Daniel Jones, Dexter Lawrence, and then they traded in and in the back end of the first round, and they got DeAndre Baker, one of the top two, three corners unanimously in the draft. He's a talented guy. That's fine. But what are your takes on the Daniel Jones at six, especially with Allen? If they went Josh Allen and then Daniel Jones or Drew Lock at 17, I'm not mad. I'm cool. But you go Daniel Jones and Dexter Lawrence. This is like we said, the Browns trade went in that Odell Beckham trade. It wasn't just the 17th pick and another pick for Odell. The Browns also included the rights as the most poorly run franchise in football to the Giants. And this showed once again on this draft night.
You're entirely right. I was, when I was watching this, and I was at six, I was like, oh, cool. They're probably going to draft Dwayne Haskins. That's what I was thinking. But I knew, and we talked about it on Tuesday, after the Bucks pick is when everything got interesting. And on Twitter all week, or over the past month or so, you kept having the conversation between draft people saying, oh, if he's your guy, you should take him at six. If he's your guy, you should take him at six. If you're going to take him at 17, you might as well take him at six. And I'm just thinking, yeah, but if you know he's still going to be there at 17, why not just draft value? And when I saw that he actually got drafted, no shame or knock on Daniel Jones, like in terms of what he has the potential to do and for the Giants, but as an organization,
he's not a top five quarterback in this draft.
He's not a top five quarterback in this draft. I was like, even I haven't watched a whole lot. I've watched like probably two games worth of like cut up throws from him. And the one thing that upset, like, let me ask you this: do you know why? Do you remember the reason why I'm such a big Josh Rosen fan?
Besides that he played tennis.
What about him playing tennis?
Footwork.
If you have good footwork, you're going to have, when things get under duress, if you have solid footwork to come back on, you're going to give yourself at least a chance. Go watch some Daniel Jones film, even in his highlights that ESPN put up for the draft. He is happy feet as can be in the pocket. And it's not a confident, like, oh, I need to just, like, move my feet to get my shoulders where I want them to be. It looks scared at times. He throws a good ball, but his decision-making is slow. His mental processing of those decisions is slow or not where you want it to be. He predetermines and throws into double, triple coverage at times.
Guess what his last college football? Guess what his last home college football game was?
Who'd they play?
Wake Forest.
Lord, what'd he go?
They lost 52-7.
I'm pretty sure that Wake Forest team lost to Florida State this year.
They did.
Yeah, they did. Because I was at that. That was a home game. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 52-7. DeAndre,
I'm sorry. It was 59-7, and he went 17 of 36 for 145 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. So you know what? Maybe he is Eli Manning. They got the replacements, like replacement. It is a joke.
Well, I was even watching it, and I was laughing when it happened, and I happened to be watching it with a Giants fan. He goes, "Hey, you laughing at the Giants?" And I go, "Yeah." You see the pick they just make, and he goes, "Yeah, but come on, it can't be that bad." And I'm like, let me just ask you this. Don't tell me the Cardinals wouldn't have traded Josh Rosen for the 6th overall pick.
Oh, I mean, if you don't know anything, just Giants fan. You had it. I can't even talk about it. And I hope he proves us wrong. But I kind of don't because I want the David Gettleman's out of the NFL. Because you look at this whole draft, top to bottom, I think I texted you or my other buddy this. The Farrell pick, which I'm kind of settling on, like it was a reach, but you couldn't find a trade partner. Up until pick maybe 11, the only head scratcher was Daniel Jones. Teams are getting smart now. And even at the back end, there's teams trading down. Like the Seahawks had 4 picks before they made the Frank Clark trade. Now they have 9, and they have four, they have a second, a third. They traded back 7 spots, and they picked up 2 fourth-round picks. They have 4 round 4 picks, 2 round 5s, a second and a third. That is quality GM, gentleman, typical from the Seahawks. And it's just continue to not see that from the Giants. So what are your thoughts on Dexter Lawrence? Because we can talk all day about Daniel Jones and how that is just a trash pick. But do you think Dexter Lawrence is good value at 17?
Yeah, but when you put it in the frame of you traded Dexter Lawrence or you traded OBJ for Dexter Lawrence, it doesn't help make you feel all that great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the people that went after, you know, it's just tough, man. Like, you have one of the, not only, this is the thing that hurts, not only did you trade away OBJ, but you traded him away after you extended his contract. So you take some of that cap hit. Not that the Giants are going to be in any position to be making a playoff run by any means.
Oh, God, no.
But just on a pure efficiency standpoint, it goes to show that they're not thinking properly. Like, they literally don't know what they're doing because you don't make a move like that. You trade before, and then the other team can figure out what contract they're going to sign. Frank Clark. Prime example.
Yes. Ugh.
You know, but you... And don't get me wrong, Dexter Lawrence, solid player. Listed 6'5", 342. I saw this man. Literally was the mountain of Game of Thrones on that Clemson team. This dude was a giant. And he'll be a great key piece. As long as he stays healthy, he'll be a great key piece moving forward. But if you were to say you got him and Josh Allen next to each other, wow, all of a sudden you bolstered your D-line.
Mm-hmm.
But you made a lateral move by getting Daniel Jones, a la probably essentially future Eli Manning. Might rip it up in the postseason if they can get him there. But, like, I'm convinced that Eli Manning's only purpose in the NFL was to be Tom Brady's kryptonite.
And he did it. I can't believe that guy.
And he did it.
I can't believe
he has
it. I can't believe he has 2 Super Bowl rings.
Over Tom Brady.
That's so funny.
That's crazy, right?
It's so funny.
So maybe Daniel Jones will have some crazy sorcery that he's supposed to, you know, maybe he's going to be the one that takes down, like, Pat Mahomes and Baker Mayfield.
I think Pat Mahomes is. We'll get to him. We'll end the podcast with some thoughts on Tyreek Hill. We'll end it at 2:30 with some very serious, a quick serious conversation. Not even serious. We won't even touch on all that stuff. We'll just talk about how it affects the Chiefs and stuff. Because I'm getting a little worried about the Chiefs. I'm just a slight little bit worried. But yeah. Any quick thoughts about DeAndre Baker, their 30th pick, 6'5",
1,193. I mean,
only corner drafted in the first round. God, this draft is working out so perfectly for the Bucks. I love it.
It really is working out. Really, this draft, the way the board fell really appropriately in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I thought. I mean, you traded away Eli Apple after that experiment didn't work out well.
But he's working out in the Saints, obviously.
Exactly.
Always work like that.
Yeah, always be like that. So you at least get yourself some more talent back into it. Georgia was a solid defense. He was the 2018 Jim Thorpe Award, which is the nation's best defensive back. Josh Jackson, the cornerback from Iowa, also won it a couple years ago, and he's started balling at the end of the season last year for the Packers, and mm-hmm. he's going to be a staple for them. So it's not an award that you just kind of throw around. He played in the SEC, which I don't want to like diminish, but I'm not crazy about SEC offenses.
Yeah.
So, especially the quarterbacks in the SEC, like Tua's good. Tua's not great, but he's good. But outside of that, there aren't, at least this year, I don't think there were many quarterbacks in the SEC that were going to mind-boggle you with what they were throwing at you. Mm-hmm. So,
quick Bama question. Is that Jerry guy, is he in this draft?
I don't think so.
Okay, because that guy would be a top echelon receiver. Because that guy makes plays all the time. But all right, we're already halfway through, man. We're already rolling through it. So I think this could be one of my three favorite picks of the whole draft so far. And the Jaguars do what I like teams do, and that's, you know, just keep, you add talent. You keep adding, you pick best player available. And they did that by adding Josh Allen, the top three pass rusher from the edge, probably top two edge rusher in the whole draft. And he's going to be outside linebacker. So this is the linebacking core for, this is the front seven for Jacksonville. Yannick Ngakoue.
Stud.
Taven Brown, first round pick last year out of Florida.
Potential stud.
Marcel Darius.
Stud.
Calais Campbell. Super stud.
Super stud.
Telvin Smith.
Mega stud.
Miles Jack.
Also stud.
And Josh Allen. Man.
That front seven's scary.
You know I'm going to buy so much into the Jacksonville Jaguars hype this year with Nick Foles at quarterback.
Yeah, especially with BDN, you know?
Dude, their NASCAR package...
It's going to be nuts.
Is Campbell, Ngakoue, Josh Allen, and then whoever you want.
Probably just Tavern at the three technique.
Yeah, they get a safety, or they get one safety and then just load up on the offense the rest of the draft. This team's going to, because there are so much receivers and running back in this, because they're trying to trade Leonard Fournette. Alfred Blue, I'm pretty sure Alfred Blue signed up in Buffalo, even though he says he's on Jacksonville right now. Let me look at that real quick. But you get the best defender in college football last year. Swept the awards. 17 sacks. Alfred Blue Jackson. Okay. Someone else went to Buffalo. I gotta think about that. But you get that player at seven, a guy who was slotted as high as three. I mean, this is just a home run for Jacksonville and what they're trying to build, especially in that division when you have the Texans, who terrible O-line, Colts, good O-line, but their weakness is on the edge, their tackles, and Mariota, who has another solid O-line. Jacksonville's going to win with defense, and they have a creative offensive mind with a Super Bowl MVP quarterback. They get some receiver help and a tight end in this draft. Whew, man. I'm drinking the Jacksonville Kool-Aid again.
Duval.
Love it. All right. Any quick thoughts on him?
It's just crazy that one of the best defenses in the NFL just reloads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Next, Lions. I feel like these next four picks we both like. Hockenson to Detroit. Detroit's skill position. Kerryon Johnson, they have Stafford, Kerryon Johnson, Marvin Jones, Kenny God-Galladay, Danny Amendola, Jesse James, and now T.J. Hockenson. I think that's pretty good. I think Matt Stafford can make that work.
The biggest thing for me, and not only that, is you essentially get that 6-0 lineman to help with one of the worst running games notoriously in the NFL.
Yes, absolutely. keep it moving. A guy, I think you had him top three, maybe number one, Ed Oliver. Give me all the Buffalo Bills stock, baby.
Dude, I am right there with you, just man. Defense, they are the... I think Buffalo is going to be everything that the Jags wanted to be with Blake Bortles.
For a sustainable time.
Yes.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm glad you're drinking the dude.
I can't deny it.
If they get Irv Smith Jr. or the tight end from Ole Miss in round two or even round three, I'm telling you, man, this team's gonna win 7-8 games. And then whenever New England steps down, I think because the Jets got Quinnen Williams too. I think I like how both teams are kind of mirroring each other in terms of build, where they have the young quarterback, they have veteran running back Le'Veon, but they have similar receivers in terms of a couple deep threats, middle and then like a nice blend like that, not superstars and outside, except Robbie Anderson's could become one, and defensively, Tre'Davious White, and Ed Oliver now. And then on Quinnen Williams, Leonard Williams, and Jamal Adams. Love what both teams are doing. You love Ed Oliver. McDermott's going to make him a monster. Their D-line has Jerry Hughes, Star Latuyo. I mean, I can go look at it real quick because it is just – I mean, because there's just a lot. Let me go to it. Ugh. Real quickly.
There's a lot to like about that Buffalo pick.
Jerry Hughes, Trent Murphy, Star Latuyo, Ed Oliver, Tremaine Edmonds, Lorenzo Alexander. I kind of like that. I like that a lot. Next, I'll let you talk about the Devin Bush trade-up. They traded with Denver. Denver traded back, and they got a second round, I think a third round pick out of, And the Pittsburgh Steelers get a linebacker that you valued him just as much as Devin White, undersized, speedy. And the one thing I will say about Devin Bush, especially with replacing Ryan Shazier, there I saw a thing where, what's the heck, what was the D coordinator? Was it Don Brown for the Michigan?
That sounds right.
Okay, so Don Brown wanted to go chew out the team, and Devin Bush walked up to him and said, no, I'll do it. And he went and chewed all of his old teammates out. That's the leadership that you need. That's the leadership you covet. So you quickly break down the fit and the player that Steelers got in Devin Bush. Florida guy, by the way.
I didn't know this. His sister, little sister, plays softball at FSU.
Mm-hmm. And his dad went to Florida State. Mm. Football player.
I like it.
His dad also joined the staff at Michigan, so I wonder how. Wonder why he went up to Michigan, but hey, teach his own.
NCAA, you know, that's how it be. Recruiting at its finest. The thing for me, when I saw that the Steelers traded up, I was like, interesting. Because if he would have been there at 11, I think he goes to the Bengals. Mm-hmm.
Bengals are happy with Jonah Williams, by the way. Bengals are very happy with Jonah Williams.
As they should be. Because he can play anywhere on that O-line. He can play left tackle, right tackle. He could slide down if needed to. But Devin Bush. All right. Let me rewind. What was the worst thing that happened to the Steelers over the past year and a half?
Shazier
going down. Because after Ryan Shazier had his terrible injury, and when I watched that game against the Bengals, I couldn't believe the hit that I saw, because he was on the ground. He was one of my favorite players. One of the few Ohio State players that I actively rooted for all the time, because he was just such a baller, always at the one of the best linebackers in the NFL. But after he went down, you know, they drafted the Edwards kid out of Virginia Tech, and. But that's a question. That's correct, right?
Yeah, Edmonds. Yeah, he's actually the guy from Buffalo's brother.
Yes. So they have him, but he's extremely raw, very young, but very athletic. But he needed help, and if he would have been next to Shazier, that would have been a great 1-2 punch. But getting Devin Bush is very similar to getting Devin White. On the Bucks, you kind of get that guy back in the middle. You have a guy that brings that leadership back to that defense. That's been like Ryan Shazier, in my opinion, took over it after Troy Polamalu exited, and now you have a guy that potentially can do it all over again. with Devin Bush. I just get more excited. Like, Devin White's film is very impressive because you watch what he does and you're just like, wow. But Devin, from a just like a football standpoint, I just love the way Devin Bush plays. And I love his technique. I love the way that he flows to the ball. I love the way that he closes on the linebacker. I'm really excited about this makes me almost want to cheer for the Pitts, for the Steelers again.
Bro, not over Baker.
No, not in terms to win the division, but like in terms of like cheering on for that defense. I like the move that they made because it solidifies a key point of that defense that they really needed to address. Because they just got ran over all year last year. They couldn't stop anything on defense.
Yeah. By the way, he probably had outfit of the night besides the pinstripes pink suit from Kyler Murray. So I would look up his Devin Bush's outfit. It was crazy. Moving along, because we're not even through the NBA lottery top 14. Bengals got Jonah Williams, solid O-line, first O-lineman off the board. Love that pick for them. Got to add depth. He can play inside, can play outside. Got to add depth for Dalton, because Dalton's not bad. I stand by that. After that, Packers, they in terms of production, they essentially reached for Rashawn Gary at 12. I'd like to see him get Noah Fant, but hey, they're going on defense. And their updated front seven is Mike Daniels, Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, and Blake Martinez. On top of a strong secondary, because their secondary is very young, very strong, and they also drafted, what's his name? Darnell Savage Jr., a safety from Maryland. So they're building a very, very strong defense. And they recognize that there's depth in the skill positions. So look for them to get a receiver on day two. I mean, the dream was to get DK Metcalf there, which would have been just stupid in terms of talent and all that stuff because they need a straight line guy. So, but we have to quickly move on. Christian Wilkins to the Dolphins at 13. Light loved the pick. I think he's the best Clemson D lineman. Interested to see what you have to say about that. He's a culture guy too. For a team,
exactly.
For a team that's in a full tank.
Exactly. What were the last year? What was Miami's pick? You remember? Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. Bama.
So arguably, you get a Bama guy who won the national championship. All right, let's turn around this year. Get a Clemson guy who won the national championship. We got our leader in the secondary. We got our leader in the front four, at least. A guy that's going to come to work. He's listed at 6'3", 315. He can probably play anywhere along the D-line. Great talent. Again, that Clemson... you couldn't go wrong with drafting any of that Clemson D-line.
Unless it's Dexter Lawrence at 17 for Odell Beckham Jr.
Only because it's for Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes. To keep it moving once again, Falcons picked your boy, Chris Lindstrom from Boston College, at 14. And then they traded up to get back in the first round and get Caleb McGarry from Washington. Kind of a reach there, but they identified their talent. They identified that last year they didn't have the best O-line, and they made some moves with it. So how do you feel about Lindstrom going 14? We had a mock, I think, tail end of the first round at 29 or something like that. How do you feel about him going this high, 14?
Oh, I think it's a great pick. I think whatever, like I said, I think whatever team was going to snag him was going to be getting someone that they really were really good. I think he's just dependable moving forward. He can play anywhere along the O. Probably not best to put him at tackle. Probably play anywhere inside, but could play tackle and if needed. Again, my favorite thing about watching this dude when BC played FSU was just how big he was. But BC had a big line across the board. But this dude just moved better than anyone else on that O-line. And he paved the way for that awesome big back that they had. That I think his last name's Dillard. And especially when you're going up against the tough fronts that Tampa's going to be giving all the NFC South, the tough fronts that a healthy Saints front will give you, and a tough front of what the Panthers are going to throw at you, especially with the addition of Burns.
Build off that. Go from Lindstrom to Burns right after that, too. We'll circle back to Haskins after.
So I think that really, it's drafting O-line's never sexy, but it's the best pick you can make in terms of investing in your offense as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
You improve the run game, hopefully. You improve your pass protection, hopefully, which is going to improve your running back production, which is going to improve your route running because the receivers are going to have more time and quarterbacks are going to feel more comfortable in the pocket. If you hit on your O-line.
Especially because the Falcons started 6 different players at guard last year, and Matt Ryan was sacked 42 times last season. Oof. So it's a good transition into your boy, Brian Burns, who was phenomenal value at 16 for the Panthers, a team that finished bottom 6 in sacks and bottom 2 in quarterback hits, despite blitzing at one of the highest rates. Thank you, Evan Silva, for all of these stats. You are just the best. But, yeah, him and Mario Addison bookending that defensive line now.
Again, I think Brian Burns is my favorite part about – my favorite highlight I'll never forget about Brian Burns is when we were down at IMG during the second week of camp and we tried to run one of those flare screw – like trips, three receivers to one side, motion the running back out of the backfield towards them and just throw that screen out to that. And he was the D end. Lined up probably like a yard and a half outside that tackle on that play side, and he literally jumped off the ball, or got off the ball, saw that it was a pass, first play it happened, he tipped it up and nearly intercepted it and caught it. They ran that offense ran the same play like 2 or 3 plays later, and he didn't even tip it. He just literally caught it, jumped up, caught it, and just took it back. And I was at that point, I was like, dude, this kid is nuts. He has, I know people freak out, and it's not really anything that needs to be overly stated, or like, I think it kind of gets overhyped, is his bend, you know, going under the table type thing, like what Von Miller does, just kind of like, you can't block me if I'm this low. And I know people are worried about his speed to power part and his run defending part. But that dude's a monster, and I think in terms of value, I think the Panthers got the best pick in the draft.
Ooh, love it. And he can play outside linebacker too. So,
they can play him at 4-3 and on the edge bookend rush, or they can put him at 3-4 outside linebacker. And like I said on Tuesday, this kid is athletic enough that you could easily drop him into coverage if need to, like in a 3-4. Or take a running back out of the backfield. He's fast, he's long, and he just knows how to make plays.
Yeah, and Spider-Man. They highlight that the whole time. Pick before him, Dwayne Haskins, went to the Washington Redskins at 15. Redskins, they're probably the happiest team in the whole draft because they didn't have to trade up to get Dwayne Haskins, a quarterback who played high school ball, was in Maryland. You saw Redskins jerseys in Redskins and Ravens jerseys within his group of family and friends watching the draft with them. And he played high school ball 25 minutes away from FedEx Field, where I'll be playing on Sundays. Keenum and Alex Smith are not long-term answers. Colt McCoy's not a long-term answer. I am high on Dwayne Haskins. I think he should have been the Giants quarterback selection because, you know, he has the size, the arm strength, touch, over the middle. I mean, I just love everything about this guy's makeup. And then they trade back into the first round at 26 to get Montez Sweat, a project player. And listen to this front seven they now have. Their weak link is Matt Iandonis, underrated player at left end. Jonathan Allen, Bama. Darren Payne, Bama. Montez Sweat. Ryan Kerrigan, Mason Foster, and they have Reuben Foster. And they have Landon Collins in the bookend. Still have Josh Norman. I like what Washington's doing, man. And I really love the Haskins for the future, and I love the Sweat pick for the now.
Well, me and you were both heavy, heavy, heavy on the Redskins train last season before they just got decimated by injuries. Literally on the O-line, on the defense, their entire team took a hit. Started with Darius Geis tearing his ACL in the preseason, and then went through, had 4 different starting quarterbacks last year. Alex Smith, Colt McCoy.
Four, Mark Sanchez.
Mark Sanchez and Josh Johnson. So they went through 4 quarterbacks. They were decimated on the O-line. So they added depth in one of the most very athletic, like you said, a project guy, but someone that is raw in what they do, but surrounded by the rest of the talent that's on that D-line, may get some good one-on-one opportunities and may be able to flourish. I love the Haskins pick because I think they got exactly what they wanted, exactly the guy they wanted without having to move. Like, they have to give... The Redskins as a whole just need to be thanking Dave Gettleman for not taking the guy that they probably had at the top of their board, maybe other than Kyler Murray, but that was never realistic for the Redskins to snag. And they didn't have to move. They didn't have to go up and down. They just patiently had to wait. Patience is a virtue. Got their guy. Realized one of the guys that was probably closer to the top of their board kept sliding and sliding and sliding. They're like, yo, we got to make a move. Go and get their guy who arguably, like, there were times where Montez Sweat was projected top 12, top 13.
We had him 8 to Detroit.
Exactly. So, supreme talent. This pass rushing class is a lot of talent. So, Redskins killed it. They got to really be looking forward to
rookie camp and stuff like that, what the future has.
As long as they can stay healthy, man.
Let's hope. Let's hope. We got 10 minutes left. A couple picks to get through. Garrett Bradbury, we nailed this 10-18 in Minnesota team and everything. Love this fit. Guards can play guard, can play center. Perfect for the zone scheme. That's what North Turner runs. That's what Dalvin Cook's best at. I mean, I think it's just money. After them, the hometown team of the draft, Tennessee Titans took Jeffrey Simmons. I mean, I know he's a talent coming off 20 ACL, and then I was reminded of on the broadcast of his domestic violence history and the videos, and they showed ESPN spent 10 minutes showing the video, talking about all that stuff. Since he got to Mississippi State, he's been clean, he's been fine, all that stuff, but it's just a very uncomfortable situation. And it also doesn't make sense for the Tennessee Titans because they have 5 picks in this whole draft, and they wasted one on a player that is probably not going to play for 2019. Very weird. So let's just leave that there. Let you talk about your boy Joey Flacco. By the way, a lot of people mocked the Broncos getting a quarterback. We were smart and said, you know, they're not going to trade for Flacco just to draft the quarterback of the first pick. They're going to try to get him a weapon, and they got him a weapon. You're one of your favorite players in the draft, Noah Fant. And Noah shares your namesake. Joe Flacco loves tight ends, and now he has this tight end, and now their skill position players are Flacco, Philip Lindsay, Deshaun Hamilton, Cortland Sutton, Emmanuel Sanders when he returns, and Noah Fant. That's probably the best skill position players that Flacco's had since the Super Bowl.
I'd agree. I think the Broncos kind of got exactly what they wanted to, even though they dropped 10 picks. Because, like, looking at all the picks beforehand, who would they have taken?
A tight end or a lineman.
Okay, so maybe Jonah Williams. Mm-hmm. Maybe Garrett Bradbury. But other than that, I don't think they missed out on anything they didn't want. So I don't think they would have really reloaded their front 7. They wouldn't have taken an outside linebacker. So I think they got exactly what they wanted. Picked up some capital. Gave Joe Flacco a big target in the middle of the field. I'm really excited to see what he can do in Mile High.
So, next pick was Darnell Savage Jr. We already talked about that, how it adds another talent next to Andre Amos, your boy for the Packers, and the DBs we talked about extensively. Then Philadelphia, just always doing smart stuff with Howie Roseman, trades up 3 spots with Baltimore, right above Houston, drafts Andre Dillard, the best passing blocking tackle in the draft, and they replaced Jason Peters a year before, where he's going to get in the room, he's going to get into it with one of the best O-line coaches in the NFL, develop behind This keeps Lane Johnson at right tackle. Develop behind Peters. This is a slam dunk move because he was going to go 23 to Houston, and now Houston went with Titus Howard. And I don't know how much you know about Titus Howard, but I didn't know anything about him. And then I saw what he was walked on to Alabama State as a quarterback and tight end. And I'm like, oh, so he has quick feet. And then I saw his highlights against – he was dominating against Auburn. Dominating. And he has such quick feet, strong hands. So I'm not mad that Houston got this pick, especially with Cody Ford and all that stuff on the board. But, I mean, the Dillard pick and the Eagles move is just shows why they are
– the ultimate finesse.
It just shows why they are in this groove – where they are just dominating the draft and dominating transactions, just always a step ahead. And it's so impressive to see.
They're much closer to the New England side of management than they are to the Giants side of management to put it
in perspective. I think they're the second best run organization in football.
Who else? Yeah, I don't. Who else would you? They got a first round pick by trading away Sam Bradford.
I know, it's brilliant, isn't it? It's brilliant. I mean, second best, I'd probably go. I mean, besides them, it's, I think, Seattle. Even though Seattle's coaching staff may be trash in terms of offensive coordinating, but in terms of trading down and getting assets consistently, it's brilliant. So we already talked about Josh Jacobs. My man Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown, goes to Baltimore. Fantasy purposes is not good. Lamar Jackson's touch, but now you play man on man with Marquise Brown, if he's healthy and he clears, you play that for a full game, Lamar's going to hit him once. And that once is going to blow the defense open. And it's going to go for a long round. He's going to be drag routes, get him open. There's going to be quick screens, get him open. Love what this does for the passing game because they didn't have anyone. Now they have a deep threat, a guy who can, a home run threat. Love this pick for Baltimore.
My biggest thing is, you have to, as a defense defending Baltimore and Lamar Jackson, you have to devote so much to stopping that option and so much to stopping that run. There were teams were putting 8 in the box, 9 in the box at times. And they still will because that's the biggest threat. But you get, like you just said, you get Marquise Brown on one big play and that 9 slowly goes into 8. And that 8 slowly goes into a soft 8. And then that opens up the run game and allows for bigger gaps to be hit for Lamar Jackson, whoever they have carrying the ball.
Mark Ingram.
And then you start hitting. Oh, that's right. And then you have that hit. And then after they have to start recommitting to that, you get back on a big, just a huge playmaker. Just a huge, huge, huge playmaker that if he wouldn't have had the injuries.
Lefranc's.
In his. Yeah.
In his foot.
Yeah. Yes. He would have probably been a top 12 pick.
Yeah. This is all predicated on Lamar Jackson's development as a passer, which this whole Ravens ceiling is. So, only a couple picks left that we haven't really talked about. Sweat, Abram. Another one, man. You and I got Tillery to Chargers, right? That's the only hole they had on their whole team. They get Tillery. Perfect fit. Win now. Guy can come in and play across the D-line. Phenomenal pick. Love it. LJ Collier from TCU went to Seattle. And then the Patriots bookended the draft first round with N'Keal Harry from Arizona State, who is just a monster. And won't surprise me if he is just a monster for the New England Patriots. He's not my favorite receiver. I think he's the second best receiver behind Akeem Butler. But this guy's just a complete, and he's just a monster. So we've covered the draft very quickly. We have a minute left. And I'm worried about I just want to say this real quickly. I don't mean to end on a great, awesome night for football fans. But before the draft started, audio was released about a conversation Tyreek Hill had with his fiance about the whole case going on with his son, how he broke his son's arm. You go read it for yourself. Hopefully you come up with this. If you're a sane person, you come up with the same judgments as we haven't talked about, but I assume it's the same judgments where this guy needs to get cut. He needs to be out of the league. If a DA, if a district attorney of a city is disappointed that he cannot pursue charges against you, you know something's up. And that's what happened in this case. I saw Tyreek Hill play his first game at Oklahoma State at FSU, and I've never seen a more electric player in my life. You see how awesome he is and what he does to the Kansas City offense. But this is disgusting. And it wouldn't shock me if he's released in the morning. He was suspended from April activities. I mean, come on. It's April 20. We're recording this April 26th. Get a grip. Get rid of this guy. Get him out of the league. Make an example out of him. Because this is, he also got kicked out of Oklahoma State for assaulting his pregnant girlfriend. This is a pattern. A pattern of disgusting behavior. And it's not only affecting him, and I don't even want to talk about the football senses, but the Chiefs just traded for Frank Clark, who has another issue of domestic violence and assault, stuff like that. So something's up with Kansas City where they're valuing football over people. And now, I mean, Pat Mahomes is on the Madden cover, so the Madden curse started early. And had to play a snap because I don't see them getting a Tyreek Hill in this draft, because the only Tyreek Hill they draft was Marquise Brown. And the only player they could get, the only leverage they had was their 30th number 30 overall draft pick. And they traded that to get Frank Clark. So, don't know if you have anything to add. We're already a little over an hour. I just wanted to say that and end that because it's not something I want to overlook. Yeah, it's way too late for me. It's way too late for Fran. I want a little rant, but yeah. I mean, of the NFL. Mm-hmm. So, to end on a good note, how about everyone goes and watches my favorite player, Damian Lillard's highlights from that 50-point that he performed to win that things, and Dane loved the kids, man. Dane loved the kids. So that's it. We'll be back. We'll probably get one. We'll probably try to get two pods again in next week. Maybe do an early recap of the NFL one and just see what we can do after that. I know you have finals next week, right? All right. Well, can you get a pod in or no? All right. That's all I needed here. All right. Noah, thank you for joining me on this late night. It's time to converge this audio files, send it out to the world, and get a great night of sleep. Absolutely. Hey, another episode of the No Ordinary Pod on the No Ordinary Pod and Radio St. Pete Network. Everyone, have yourself a good weekend.